Hello and welcome to Keanu Club, like a cool breeze over the mountains. This is episode 71, The Bad Batch, from either 2016 or 2017. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And with us today, very special guest, huge fan of Jason Momoa, Holly Gore. Hello, Holly.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for being back. So this movie I saw last year at Fantastic Fest. The year on the movie is 2016, but it just came out on VOD as we're recording this 2 weeks ago, as you're hearing this about a month ago. So it's a brand new movie. We thought this was going to be part of phase two of Keanu Club as we sort of do the VOD, the Blu-ray releases as it goes on, but it came out on VOD instead of just in theaters, so we're able to jam it in to Keanu Club phase one. Directed by Anna Lily Amirpour, who did A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, so you sort of know what you're getting into there. Mike and I have different opinions of this movie. Before we get into that, Holly, what did you think of it?
Boy, this was just a weird film, man. Like, if Firefest is to Coachella, this is like to Burning Man. Like, it's just, it's weird, it's out there, it's trippy, it's, I don't know, I have mixed feelings on it.
It's a very strange movie. My take on it is that I love, love, love a lot of what's in here, but I don't think it works as a movie.
Agreed.
I think that it's beautiful to look at almost entirely throughout. It sounds beautiful. It's got an amazing soundtrack. It's filled with characters and people doing crazy things, but I don't know why people make the decisions that they make. I don't know what anybody really wants. I don't need to know the why of things, like why of the world, but like none of Arlen's actions make sense.
Yeah, this is a film where the main character loses an arm and a leg, and I still don't feel bad for her when the film is finished. I just don't.
Well, guys, this is like my favorite movie of the year so far. I love this movie. Like, I'm not sure exactly even why. I just have like a really strong reaction to it. I think what it is for me is the premise. I bought it immediately. It instantly made me wonder about this world, you know, just the idea that like all the undesirables in America are basically sent to the border and left to fend for themselves on the other side in like this giant wasteland of a prison. Like anything could have happened in this movie after that being set up and I probably would have been fine with it. But the way it did play out, I just freaking loved. I think because it's so weird and strange and disjointed, it gives us that sense of sort of being a newcomer there. Like, we're not necessarily the main character, but we are seeing it through fresh eyes and everything. And I don't know. I think people are motivated by desperation and comfort and just the sheer will to live at points. We'll get into it more, but, you know, my immediate reaction is quite different than your guys. I really liked it.
I saw this in September. We were 5 months into releasing Keanu Club. So we were probably about a third of the way through. So I was heavily invested in Keanu. And I saw this and I was like, I like it, but I don't love it. And I watched it again last night and it still holds true. Like the same exact feeling. The first 10 minutes are astounding. Like they are perfect. Like you don't know what's going on. It's this beautiful mashup of like pop music and just horrifying images. The fact that all that she wants is like now eternally marked in my brain with getting your arm and legs sawn off.
Yeah, she does it. Anna Lily Amanpour does what Eli Roth could never do with Knock Knock and his choice of music, right?
Yes.
Like what he was going for. This is a clear-cut example of the way to do that.
But then like as soon as Suki Waterhouse, as soon as Arlen escapes the cannibal lair, the movie kind of like grinds to this weird halt that like there's cool stuff. Like there's Jason Momoa in reading glasses drawing a picture of his daughter.
Basically him doing anything in this
yes.
film.
And then like
good.
Listening to Karma Chameleon while he like breaks a woman's neck and then eats her. Like there's great stuff, but like nothing, it's just sluggish. And I don't think, like the other thing to point out up top is that there's very, very little dialogue. Like, Keanu's in the movie for probably 5 to 10 minutes and probably has, like, 60% of the dialogue in the movie. And I don't think that's a problem, but, like, narratively, just, you know, in the non-spoken ways, it just seems to drag.
I hear what you're saying. I didn't experience that because I was so engaged. You know, basically, it turns into, like, a revenge film for a minute, like, after she you know, heals from getting her arm and leg chopped off. She goes back to kill the people who did it. She gets one of them, and then their kid, Jason Momoa's daughter, follows her back to where she's staying, the comfort place where Keanu is. And then it becomes like, you know, she has to return the daughter or else Jason Momoa is going to kill and eat her, I suppose. And through there, there's like this weird, strange relationship that evolves in one way or the other.
Well, explain why you love it. Like, what do you, like, why is this better than everything else that came out this year?
I mean, I don't know. I just think it's a great dystopian sci-fi. Like, it's a good modern dystopian sci-fi. You just don't get a lot of stuff like this anymore. The closest thing you get is stuff like Mad Max.
Okay.
I mean, look, just in the sense of you're dealing with people surviving in a wasteland, fending for themselves. Like, they don't say it in Mad Max, but, like, some of those mutants are eating people for sure. Like, there's cannibalism going on. Also, I think because there's been a lot of cannibal movies recently, it's almost like the new zombie as in terms of genre, the horror genre, but you could do so much more with that than the zombie. Like, I feel like you could get weird and strange and just have a character that is a cannibal in this, like, strange vision of the future, this future society here. Everything just sort of clicked with its weirdness and its ability to create a unique world. I mean, my favorite stuff isn't even the Keanu stuff, which is great. My favorite moment is one of the speechless moments where Jim Carrey insists on getting his portrait drawn by Momoa in order for exchanging information about his daughter's whereabouts. Like, it's just moments like that. Like you said, like, this movie's filled with great moments, but I feel like collectively they add up, whereas I guess you don't.
Do you think it's a good movie?
Yes. I don't think it's like a bad movie that I think is good or anything. Like, I genuinely think this is a really good movie. I'm just like enamored by it.
I don't think it's a bad movie. I just think it's like a mediocre movie that looks and sounds beautiful.
This is a movie that I would watch throughout the course of like 10 sittings on HBO, like catching like 20 minutes here and then I have to leave and then I catch the ending at one point and then like 3 days later when I can't sleep, I catch the beginning finally. It's just like you said, it's really beautiful to look at. The characters are really cool. It's very like it has a broad range of things that it wants to go after. But I just felt like for a desert community, like the Bad Batch, it would be more organized by this point. Because it's not like they were all just kicked out of the States last week.
Yeah, we're not sure how long they've been out there.
Yeah. So I would think that would be more organized. And it just still feels like such like a wasteland out there, but a not established wasteland. There were parts of it where I thought it could have been stronger like that.
Yeah, and I think for me, it's like the world that it hints at instead of shows is really strong. I just, this sense of a world out there that would do this, you know, that would go to this extreme, that actually sort of set up like this, like, concentration camp for undesirables, and it's just like no holds barred, anything goes type of prison society out there, just like completely forgotten about. Like, just having that in my mind and wondering, you know, who did what to get there, and no one's really explaining themselves. And I mean, I guess it's partially, it was like I bought into the mystery whether or not there was intended to be one. I just found everything to be very sort of mysterious and wanted to get to the bottom of it.
I think my big problem is that it doesn't fit as a film, I don't think. I think that it would work as like a 25-minute short or like a 10-hour TV series. I either want way less or way, way more.
Yes. Well,
it feels very much, at one point, it basically turns into a Western about, like, a girl who's been kidnapped that has to be retrieved by someone. You know, Momoa can't get her back and go into this society, this haven that Keanu runs. Only this girl can. So it almost feels like you could make this a Western where, like, these two people had to ally together in order to rescue the girl and bring her back. And I was getting a big feel of that. I'm a big fan of Westerns. And so at one point I was like, oh, it's like a sci-fi Western cannibal weirdo LSD trip.
But, like, the team-up is bullshit, though, because Jason Momoa's people kidnap Arlen, Miami. Let's call him Miami Man, because that's his name, and it's an amazing name. Miami Man's people kidnap Arlen, cut off her arm and her leg. She escapes.
Correct.
She goes out to the wasteland. She finds comfort, where Giovanni Ribisi is this homeless man dancing. I was like, this is why Mike loves it, because he's just Giovanni Ribisi doing amazing weird things. Then she, you know, she gets a leg, she sets on her own, she sort of sets out for vengeance, I guess.
Yeah, that's not really clear either. She's just like, I'm going to get this gun and walk back out into the desert.
Right. and she finds, unknowingly, Momoa's wife and daughter and kills the wife and sort of takes the daughter back because she's like, I can't just leave this girl out here to die.
Which she doesn't know, like, that she's, they haven't been in any scenes prior to that. Like, she just found her, knew she was one of those people, and decides, knowing that's her daughter behind her, to shoot her in the head. Which, like, at least in Kill Bill, when she kills Veronica Fox's daughter, she's like, you can come after me and revenge me, but your mom, like, basically, like, fucked up my life.
Yep.
But here, she's just like, I think you're one of those people. I don't know exactly how bad you are. Maybe you're just kind of like, you said yes, you have, like, poor impulse control, and, like, all your friends were eating people, so you're eating people. But just shoots her, and then, like, you would think, like, all right, shoot the girl, too. But instead, she brings her back and is the worst parent ever because she just gets her to do her makeup and then loses her at a rave. Like, any kind of, like, quality that could have been, like, redeemed there, I was like, oh, you're, like, your vengeance quest was just dumb.
These are the bad batch. These are irredeemable characters to begin with.
Well, no, because that's the thing. They're not irredeemable characters. They're irredeemable from society.
Jason Momoa is redeemable. Do you see the paintings he's drawing? He's a beautiful artist.
Well, I feel like she gets, like, first in that scene, I felt like she was all talk, and then when she actually shoots the girl, I got a sense that, like, a little bit, maybe not remorse, but that she didn't exactly mean to shoot her in the face and kill her. Maybe she was going to wound her or something. And while she's doing LSD instead of looking after this kid, yeah, I don't know, she eventually rescues the kid and returns it to her father. So ultimately, she does the right thing. You know, as far as, like, a movie needs to be concerned, in my mind.
But do you think she would have done that had she not been confronted by him out in the desert while high on drugs?
Not necessarily, no. But, I mean, why does she end up falling in love with him?
Because he's, look at him.
Exactly, look at, right? Like, see, that's the thing I was fishing for, because why do you not need more, you don't need more proof in, aside from, like, he's gorgeous to fall in love with a cannibal who, like, most likely
ate part of
your leg.
And also the alternative here is that he eats you.
But, like, is that, like that means that, like, the main character we've been following around is just, like, this vapid, shallow girl who's just going to fall in love with eye candy, who she knows kidnapped her and ate part of her.
Mm-hmm. Like, why doesn't she go to shoot him? She's like, all right, I killed one person. I got it out of my system.
That's one thing I started picking up, because I watched this twice in 2 weeks. So, like, the second time around, throughout the movie, Jason Momoa eats less people and more, like, birds and things like that.
Well, I mean, the bird that he eats is not by choice. It's Jim Carrey rescues him and feeds him the bird.
But the last scene of the movie is him killing the rabbit and cooking that, not killing the girl and eating her, you know? So there is a change going on.
I think that's a joke, though. Like, I don't think that's like a we're not eating people anymore. It's like, we have a meal here, an easy meal to kill. Let's do that. I think because it's like the whole thing, like, you know, the girl carries the rabbit around the whole movie, and you sort of know that it's going to be eaten, because that guy is not selling rabbits in comfort for pets. Like, they're being sold to eat. So you know it's going to get eaten. So I don't think that's like him turning over a new leaf. I think that it's maybe just him like, oh, Suki Waterhouse is one of us now. I don't want to eat her. I don't want to eat my daughter. So until we can find the next person, we need to eat something. So let's just kill this rabbit.
See, I saw it as reclaiming his daughter back into their tribe because like she had a stuffed bunny and she has this real bunny. And he basically just pulls it away from her and be like, no, you're not going to have a pet. I'm going to kill this pet. Like, you're back to like living out here with the cannibals. This is our way of life. Because she's clearly upset. It's like, he's like, I'm going to do this even though you're going to cry tears at me.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a positive, like, thing, Mike.
Yeah, I'm dad, listen to me. I'm killing your fucking pet.
But I think for me the point is they're not like he's not going to kill her like from this point on either. Like, he's going to take
her back. That's an optimistic way
into,
of looking at it.
Well, I feel like that's the point at the end, is that they have created the new nuclear family out there in the wastelands of the deserts of the Bad Batch land or whatever is going on out there, is that these people are going to start a new unit and go somewhere new from there. Somewhere between the bridge people and the comfort people are going to be their people.
Oh, no, I see them absolutely going back to the bridge people. I don't see there's any other outcome.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just more of a romantic. I don't know. Well, that's how I read it.
I mean, look, she's missing two limbs. Like, you know, if you're going to pick out, like, a new wife, at least get one that had all the parts the old one had.
Yeah, but this is the girl that went back and rescued his daughter from Crazy Keanu. Like, there's got to be more than one reason why these cannibals aren't attacking the comfort place, right? I mean, it's got to be just more than pregnant girls with machine guns protecting them. There's got to be something. Like, they have lots of resources. Maybe there's funding. Maybe there's a reason that Keanu is so set up.
Well, it's a cult. I mean, he's a cult leader.
Yeah, but I mean, they also seem to have food and water and crops and, like, places to sleep and, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not eating each other. Like, they have other resources.
I feel like the reason that they're so successful, the reason he's able to be the Dream, which is his name in this movie, is because they have the resources. I feel like they had the water, they had the food or whatever. Just the same thing in Fury Road. Like, they have the water, and so people have to deal with their way of life. That he's able to dictate and control and live this lavish lifestyle and, like, pamper his harem of pregnant brides. And the rest of the people, you're not living out in the desert, but you're not, like, in air conditioning. Like, you're out on, like, on the desert, sort of, you know, hawking your wares. Like, it's a better life, but it's not a good life for them. Like, they're all dirty and greasy and homeless. And then you see Keanu, and, like, there's literally a lit indoor swimming pool and, like, a nursery with all these toys. I think there's a real delineation here between, like, I'm giving you an okay life, I'm gonna keep you alive, but I'm not gonna let you, like, thrive. But if you're a beautiful girl and sort of you will keep the race going, you can be pampered.
He's super creepy in this role. Like, everybody's wearing t-shirts, The Dream Is In Me. Like, that was stylistically fucking creepy.
Can you believe that they don't sell that t-shirt online? I'm so upset. Like, how is that not a thing? I saw a picture of Anna Lily wearing a comfort t-shirt, but there's no shirts that I can find on Etsy, on Amazon, on anywhere online that's The Dream Is Inside Me.
Yeah, that's a missed opportunity there. Yeah.
Yeah, even I would wear one of those shirts, a sky.
Well, then especially you realize they're all, like, pregnant and they're all with his kid. Like, that's so creepy.
Well, I think you raised an interesting point with his character, too, is, like, he is by no means a good guy whatsoever. You know, like, he basically, in exchange for safety, like, yeah, you get, like, protection from the outside people, like the scavengers and the maniacs and the road warriors, what have you, but he basically keeps these people sedated with drugs, you know? Like, he even says, like, that's how you sort of run a society around here, is just you gotta keep everybody high and, like, no one will complain.
I mean, he's a handsome Immortan Joe.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, how Manson probably pictured himself, right? Like, out there in the desert with all these girls.
That's the problem. Like, if Fury Road didn't exist, I would be all about this movie. But the fact that Fury Road exists, and also, for the record, Anna Lily hates Fury Road. I think she thinks it's, like, overrated trash. So,
well, the Mad Max series in general, you know, I feel like this has way more in common with the second movie.
But the fact that, like, Fury Road was this, like, hyper-stylized, colored, saturated wasteland.
What is this? I mean, this is...
No, it's the same thing. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what you're talking about. Like,
no, I'm saying that because it's so similar, this doesn't have the punch that it could.
I suppose. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like she really goes all that far out there with, like, color-coded meaning to any extent. I think it's just there's splashes of color where there's life and characters, like her yellow pants and Keanu's white outfit. Like, just you need the main character to stand out a bit, and that's what she uses for. I don't feel like it's, you know, hyper-splashed or anything with, like, too much color, oversaturated or anything.
No, but the color, like, it's very vivid. Like, color is a specific choice in this, just like it is in Fury Road. That's all I'm saying. Like, a lot of movies, and that's true of a lot of movies, but the fact that they're so similar that they came out a year apart from one another, it's not differentiated enough, I don't think. I mean, they're both led by females, right? Like, mm-hmm. Badass girls. But I feel like you know so much more about, I don't want to become like a Mad Max podcast, but, like, you know so much more about what Furiosa wants than what does Arlen want? Like, she wants to be pretty. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what she's searching for the whole movie. She knows what she doesn't want by the end of it, but she might not know exactly what she does, but, you know, she knows what she doesn't. And I feel like that's enough for me. And it is kind of funny. This is like the walking version of Fury Road. Like, because there's really not that many vehicles in here, and she walks a hell of a lot across the desert. And they're both missing arms, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, I don't know how many more things. Like, we, like, they're the same type of movie.
And
but,
I,
like,
love them both. I mean, maybe it's just the premise of, you know, amputees in the desert, like, fighting to survive. Like, that really just sort of, like, rings my bell. I don't know. This just sort of, for someone who likes, like, hard sci-fi, that likes to be challenged and confused at times when he's watching his movies, like, this did it for me in a way I wasn't expecting. I actually thought this was going to be way more straightforward and clear cut. And when it wasn't, when it was like way more of sort of like a silent film for most of it, I was just really captured by that.
I don't want to sound like I don't like this movie, because I enjoy a lot of this movie. I'm just surprised, because I understand that, like, this is basically made exactly for you. Like, I get that.
It's weird to even try and explain myself. Like, I don't have this feeling about movies that often, I'd say, you know? Like, maybe once or twice a year, and never for something we're doing a podcast about.
I'm just most surprised that you think it's a good movie, that it works as a movie.
Yeah, I do. In its weird, wacky way, totally. I mean, I just got what it was trying to do from where I was sitting. I'm not saying, like, I understood the intent of the filmmaker or, you know, anything like that. But for me, it worked. I mean, for me, it was basically she had to get the kid back, and she did, and that's the main objective. And, or at least Momoa needed, I should say Miami Man needed to get his daughter back. And by the end of the movie, he did. And so, as you know, that was conclusive enough for me.
I'm just not sure why she has any obligation to bring the kid back.
No, like she hasn't been shown to be a character with a strong moral compass because she shoots the mom in the head.
Yeah, so why does she do it? Like the central point, the central driving force of this movie is that she has a desire in her to reunite this kid with Jason Momoa. And I'm okay with not knowing why to certain things, but I need to know why she feels that way. And the movie has no intention of letting us know.
I think it's because she's not consistent. Like thinking about it now, my favorite character in this film, looks aside, is Jim Carrey's character, because he's consistent. He finds wounded things or interesting things, puts it in his cart, and like wheels it to somebody else to like deal out with. Or he has this information, he's like, all right, I want something and I'll trade it to you. Like, he's at least consistent. Everybody else, it's like, oh, what way is the wind blowing? All right, I'm gonna do a random action. So even by the end, that's not wrapped up. And it's okay to have one random character, but you have this film where you have like five random characters, and just at that point I don't want to have to think that much about it. I want them to be kind of more on their path.
And for me, I think like Miami Man is the only one who even outright says what his motivation is, and it's that the only thing around that he, the only thing he cares about is that girl, and he'll do anything to get her back. So if he's breaking his code of conduct by not eating this girl because she can help him, like, I buy the gradual change in him. And I also feel like the reason she returns him is because deep down it's the right thing to do. She belongs with her real dad, even though Keanu can feed her spaghetti. That is, she does just not belong there, even if it's technically a better place for her, or like more safe or whatever. Like, it's the right thing to do, and she eventually does it.
Well, I mean, that's an easy decision, because Keanu, for the second time in three movies, is a very minor character in terms of screen time, but also just a terrible, terrible person. Just like in The Neon Demon, and I love this heel turn in his career. Like, I want more of this.
Was he in Neon Demon?
Yeah, he is the motel manager.
Okay.
Another movie about eating people.
I'll have to go back and watch that.
So he plays the Dream, and like I said, he has most of the dialogue in this movie, which is astounding, considering how little he's on screen. But all along the movie, you know, like, there's signs that say, like, you know, find the Dream, what is the Dream, you can't enter the Dream until the Dream enters you, and, like, once you find out that the Dream is a person, like, that gets real weird. He is just this cult leader who has a DJ and throws cool parties, like, cool raves out in the desert, like Mike said, keeps everyone subdued with drugs, and bangs his beautiful harem, and, you know, swims in this pool and eats spaghetti, and, like, that's his whole thing. The fact that, like, I mean, he's got so many good lines in this, and he's a really cool character because it works. Like, this is a new type of Keanu, and I think he does it really well. I just want, if this was a TV series, I want, like, a full hour about the Dream. You know what I mean? Like, I want, like, episode 6 of 8 or 6 of 10 to be, like, she meets the Dream, and, like, it's just her, it's like them talking for an hour, and you know everything. Because you get enough of him to be like, this is a cool character, but not enough to be like, this is one of my all-time favorites. I feel like the basis is there for that. Like, he could be so, so much cooler. He's already really cool. But he could be so much cooler if you have more time with him. And the movie's like, no, we're going to watch Suki Waterhouse, like, shamble through the desert for 15 minutes.
And you know I'd watch that TV show. If they ever did it, they should do it. I mean, this actually calls for an expanded universe, because that's what I'm talking about, where it, like, hints at all these things. The Dream can't be the only guy out there. You get deeper into this place, and there's got to be even crazier looking people with even bigger setups and things. So, like, who is he even working for, maybe? You're right. I wish we did get deeper into more of his background, but I love the air of mystery. Like, here's the thing. Keanu, I would buy him as an actual, like, cult leader. You know, like, he's charismatic, he's persuasive, he's, you know, really charming. He's got, like, all the characteristics.
I mean, Mike, not to cut you off, but, like, you and I are already in a Keanu cult. Like, we've, you know...
Yeah, exactly. Well, point taken then. So I think this is also, yeah, like one of his, one of the best things he's ever done. A lot of it rides on everything he's done before, but also if you're not familiar with Keanu as in depth as we are and you watch this, it's a very striking character when he walks on screen. The first time you see him, you're not really sure. You think he's kind of a good guy, but then by the second time he talks, you like know for sure, like this guy's no good.
So just like I mentioned on the Neon Demon podcast, I once again got the opportunity to ask the director of this, so why is Keanu in this movie? And instead of, like, Nicholas Winding Refn saying about how, you know, he loved John Wick, and he, you know, just kept quoting John Wick to him, and, like, you know, he loves this guy, he loves his physicality, all this different stuff, Anna Lily Amirpour is just like, oh, I've always had a crush on him, I just wanted him in my movie. And which is, mm-hmm. like, it's, like, a less fulfilling answer, but also kind of perfect for what the whole, I guess, mentality of this is. But, like, you can see that she's also someone who, like, if he led a cult, would definitely be in that cult. I like that he takes credit for the idea of a sewer system, like the idea of indoor plumbing.
Let me ask you a question, Arlen. When you shit here in comfort, your shit goes away. Is that accurate?
I guess.
You shit, it leaves. You know why it leaves?
Because the toilet takes it someplace?
Yes, it does. Takes it where it takes it. Because of me. Because I hate the idea that my sons and daughters would have to stew shit. Cows stand in their shit. They stand in their shit because they're cows. Pigs stand in their shit because they're pigs. Some misbehaving humans been making hamburgers out of my sons and daughters. But we are not cows. We don't stand in our shit. The reason we don't is because I won't let that happen. I got each and every toilet in comfort taking that shit from all your little asses and sending it down the pipes till it reaches a place where no one thinks about it. And no one smells it. Ain't that nice of me?
Like, that dialogue is amazing to me. Like, I feel like, as I was watching that scene, you know, he says, you shit, it leaves. You know why it leaves? And then I feel like he's probably asked everyone that question. And I feel like no matter what they answer, in this case, Suki Waterhouse says, because the toilet takes it someplace, like, no matter what they say, somehow he's able to say, yes, you're right, and that's because of me. It feels very clearly, which is a really strong compliment, I think, to Anna Lily as a writer, that this does not feel like the first time he's having this conversation. Like, it feels like he's done this a lot, he's impressed a lot of people. Whether they stay or whether they go is, you know, sort of ultimately up to them, but, like, he knows how to charm you. And even though he's only on screen for a couple minutes, you're like, I want to follow this guy.
Yeah, I feel like he gave that same speech to all those girls, and it worked so well, they all ended up pregnant with his baby, Tracy Morgan style, you know? but yeah, I also feel like he's just super seductive. Like I said, like, the first time you see him, it's during the rave, which made me think of The Matrix, you know? I just can't now anytime I see a rave. But he comes out, and he's like, yo, like my DJ, like, I bring you music, we got, like, electricity, like, everybody take some acid, like, we are the Bad Batch. He basically explains to the audience, like, the Bad Batch are all the undesirables, and he gives the big speech.
I got a question. Why are we out here? Just what are we doing in the middle of the goddamn desert tonight? That's right, that's right. You want that music only Jimmy can make? Let me tell you something about Jimmy. You know why Jimmy's here?
Why?
He's Bad Batch.
Yeah, yeah,
Non-functioning member of society. That's what they told me. That's right. All of us here. We weren't good enough. Smart enough. Young enough. Healthy enough. Wealthy enough. Sane enough. Freaks. Parasites. This here's the bad batch. We ain't good. We're bad. Now there's only one rule here. And it's this. It's time to wake up. It's time to find the dream.
And it's like, yeah, you know, like, this is kind of cool. I could get behind this. But then when you get the sense that this happens, like, all the time, and it's, like, the only thing that happens, it's like, wow, how many pools can you skate and how many tabs of acid can you do before you do just kind of, like, want something more or something different or get higher up somehow, or you end up like Giovanni Ribisi, just, like, completely insane and roaming around the streets talking to yourself. Which is why I think she ends up risking everything to get out of there, because she doesn't.
I also feel like she's been there for, I don't know, 36 hours, if that. Like, she shows up, gets high AF, wanders out into the desert, gets kidnapped, goes back, and then sort of like decides to leave for good. Like, that's not a lot of time.
Well, she's been there 5 months healing, so we're not sure doing to, like, I always, like, we don't know what she's doing to get noodles and room and board. I suspected she may, you know, possibly be selling, you know, herself at somehow, because we don't see what she does as a job and, like, just what, you know, what skill does she really have? I don't know what she's doing for money.
Are we led to believe that, like, does she know? She's got to know about Keanu before that point, right? But, like, it feels like maybe just because the way the movie is presenting itself, it feels like that night that she gets high, it's the first time she's seeing that, because she's the audience surrogate. But I guess if she's been there for 5 months, she knows all about the dream, but just, I guess, didn't decide to take acid until that night?
It's not really clear.
I got the sense that that was not her first rodeo, that she did, that she was part of the collective at that point, and that was sort of the moment when she loses the kid and some type of, like, responsibility switch is forced over, that she's like, no, like, maybe there's something else.
So has she been all along looking for a way out and then finally able to smuggle a gun in her leg?
Mm-hmm. Which was cool. You gotta admit, that was really cool.
It's a cool... There's a ton of cool stuff in this movie. I'm not saying this movie's not cool. I'm just saying it's not a good movie. That's all I'm saying. But then she finally sees that opportunity, and then we kind of get Keanu in a way, sort of like the Deal With It gif, where, you know, he just deal with it, and, like, the sunglasses come on. He just says, I'm really disappointed in you, Arlen, real disappointed. And then puts on his sunglasses, like, you know what, it's the end of the conversation.
Also, we already saw the gun and the fake leg thing with Rose McGowan and
Grindhouse.
There you go. So I
oh,
was
but
like,
her I'm leg a- was a gun.
Well, I mean, in
that's
in terms
a little
of,
different
like, prosthetic
than hiding
gun,
it.
I was like, oh, this has already been done.
I hear you.
I was less impressed.
I also feel like this movie is sort of, it's hitting a couple of those types of tropes in a way, like with Keanu as the cult leader and having cannibals running around and just acid heads. Like, there's going to be certain, like, the coincidence of it being in the desert with a girl with no arm is very similar to Fury Road. You know, I just feel like mm-hmm. there are certain things that are going to match up with other films.
I guess maybe if it had went more in any of those directions, like if it had went a little bit more into, like, the action-packed way of, like, Fury Road, or if it had went a little bit more into, like, the desert drugs of, like, Fear and Loathing, or just, like, it, like, I just felt it was too much in the middle. And yeah, maybe that's what I was wanting from it, just go more in a direction. Maybe, like, it's a sexual thing, or maybe it's, like, an action thing or a vengeance thing, but even all of her efforts she take are just half-hearted. Even kidnapping the kid, she's like, all right, I'm going to lose you. Oh, I guess I'll return you. There's no strong action. Everything's just in the middle.
Like, I feel like a lot of times recently, and maybe this isn't true, maybe this is just sort of an overall sense that I've gotten of Keanu Club. I feel like a lot of times we've criticized movies for, like, not making decisions and just sort of being aimless and wanderless and stuff. Here, it's like, there's so many decisions being made, which is great, but it's, like, almost the wrong decisions in a way.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, because I could understand expecting more payoff in certain points, even though I didn't need it. Like, with the Giovanni Ribisi character, for instance, you know, he is set up for a big payoff, and it never happens. You know, like, you almost expect them to walk in on her kidnapping the girl back at the end and screwing everything up to a degree, or becoming an ally of hers for like 5 minutes at the end to distract somebody, but he never does come back. And there are, like you said, it is a little overpacked with things like that. Like, we never ever cut back to those bodybuilders that Jason Momoa seems to be in charge of. Like, he seems to have like this whole crew of bodybuilding cannibals that we only get one amazing sequence of. You almost expect like him to call upon an army of those guys at some point, and it never happens. There, I understand the frustration along those lines, but I just didn't feel frustrated. That's all I can say.
I'm just glad that Holly's on my side.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there was more other than just being like, yeah, my Miami man is super handsome. But even his character, you know, other than those like cool pajama pants and just being a badass, like, he's not the strongest character either. Like, why does he love his daughter so much? Like,
well, it's his daughter.
Yeah, but like, I
and
guess,
she was
like,
born into like this prison world, so it's vicious out there.
Like, I guess I wanted more like tender moments between them, or just like, even when he talks about her, he's like, I gotta get her back. Like, I wanted like that, like Liam Neeson, like, I'll find you, like, you know, I'll get, like, he's like, hey, did you see this girl? No? All right, I'm gonna draw your picture now. Where do I go? All right, cool.
He's very lethargic for such a athletic looking guy. Like, you would expect him to be more spry and like run more and punch more, but he moves like almost like Jason. He's very slow and lumbering and very different than what he looks like. It's almost like he's, I don't know if he's like partially a child's mind or something like that, but
yeah. Like, I would be mad if my wife was shot in the head and my daughter missing. I would be mad. He is sleepwalking. And I think that's what it is. He's like, there's no fire. Like, oh my God, I got her, get her back. She could be in the desert. She could be in like a horde of bandits getting like, you know, chopped up. It's just kind of like, I'll find her when I find her.
I want emotion from him, because like you kind of get close, like, you know, it's in there and you just don't get it. And it's strange.
And he is the one guy we find out exactly why he's there. You know, if we're to believe him, which I do, is like he tells her that he was an illegal immigrant from Cuba and went to Miami to be a tattoo artist and odd jobs and this and that. And then he got caught and thrown into the Bad Batch. And it's kind of strange that like for the one guy, like for the most quote unquote fleshed out character, he's like kind of coming across as like the least interesting in ways. I just got the sense that he was sort of zombified in a way mentally from being out there and just pumping iron and, you know, eating people, that it was no way to live, and he didn't quite understand what to do if anything ever went missing. Like, I'm sure he never ever thought that his daughter would go missing out there.
Which is fair, but like, that doesn't make him a good character.
I suppose, maybe, I don't know. I mean, he does go after her. He does want her back. That is his path in the movie, and he does do as much as he can, as much as circumstances dictate. I mean, they do run into other scavengers and they get shot, you know. I mean, Jim Carrey nurses him back to health. I mean, it's not like he's not trying. He never does go back home without her. So he is, I got the sense he was willing to die out there until he got her back.
I don't know. He's no Khal Drogo. He's cool, though. I mean, the fact that there's a movie where Jason Momoa is named Miami Man and Keanu Reeves is named The Dream is like that's enough. Like, honestly, like, that's kind of enough. Like, that's awesome.
Agreed.
Holly, do you have any other thoughts about The Bad Batch?
No, I don't. Definitely rent it before you buy it. Maybe go in on it with friends. Watch it with a friend to cut your cost down.
This was an expensive rental because this is a new movie. So I felt bad that you had to pay $7 or whatever instead of $4. But
oh,
I was like,
fine.
I mean, you get that sweet, sweet Jason Momoa in HD shirtless the entire
exactly.
time. So that's
and
something.
Even at one point when like Jim Carrey like makes him go out, I was like, oh man, he's gonna ask him to like go down on him. That's why he like sits down on that rock. But instead, it's just to sketch him. So I was like, this was so worth $7. And then it's just like this artistic moment.
My favorite moment of the movie. No, one of.
One thing I do want to point out is that they tried to make as much of this practical as possible. They tried not to use CGI at all, if they could help it. Now, I'm sure that there is some, because there's some shots where you're like, I don't know how they could hide that arm.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, they also shot the entire thing out actually in the desert. Like, there's no soundstage. Like, they all shot this, like, out in the desert in California somewhere.
Yeah, and I heard Momoa slaughtered a real pig for that scene where he's supposed to be chopping up that one girl, that he was just, they were out there, they did one extended take of him butchering an entire pig just for that amount of that shot.
Keanu sort of looks like he stepped out of a 1970s porno.
Yes.
Oh, that mustache.
The hair, the mustache, the outfit, the whole thing. I really want to emphasize again just how cool the music is in the beginning. Like, we have All That She Wants, we have the D. Antwoord song, we've got Karma Chameleon. Like, there's so much that, like, I kind of wish that was more thrilling. Like, I understand that the vibe of the movie changes.
Mm-hmm.
But you set it up so wonderfully and so beautifully. Like, maybe just give us one more at the end. You know what I mean? Maybe over the closing, them eating the rabbit. I don't know. Give me something. Because the beginning is so cool, and then it just sort of...
It turns into almost like a synth trance score for the rest of
the
film.
Yeah, I agree.
In a lot of ways.
Which is cool, but it's a different kind of cool.
Yeah, because once you're setting up that the music is going to be all these sort of old cassette tapes that have fallen from the sky or whatever, you know, that have been found out there, like, you almost think that you're going to be hearing this secondhand music the rest of the film.
The other thing I want to say is that, like, it's so weird, like, again, going back to how little dialogue there is in this movie, it's so weird that a lot of it is by Jason Momoa almost unintelligible. Like, the fact that he's doing a Cuban accent as filtered through Florida and then Mexico or wherever they are in this movie, it's so difficult to understand. Like, you get a vibe of what he's saying, but, like, I feel like he's delivering important dialogue, and you're like, what'd you say?
I liked it, though. I felt like it added to the sense of, where are we? What is this place? Like, what country is this? Where's he from? Anyone, you could run into anyone here. Like, maybe people don't understand or speak the same language. So for me, it expanded the world.
Surprise, surprise. Mike thinks something like, about the movie. Mike, any other last thoughts about The Bad Batch?
I loved it. I can't wait to get the Blu-ray. Keanu's great in it. I think the rest of the movie is great too. But, you know, look, I always have more trouble talking about a movie I love than a movie I don't. Like, I can't even necessarily put into words correctly how I like this movie all the way. Like, it just sets off a feeling for me that I enjoy from beginning to end. It's this strange, quiet, independent sci-fi that I look for, and I'm glad I found this movie this year. I would just say, look, like, give it a try. It may not be your thing, but what's the worst that can happen? $5 or $6 that you don't spend going to see, like, the new Mummy movie or something crappy in theaters. You know, at least you could watch it from home.
I'm never going to bash other people's tastes in movies. I'm just shocked here, but I also totally get it because, like, I'm trying to think of my favorite movies, and, like, Spring Breakers is one of my 5 favorite movies of all time, and people are like, how can you watch that? Like, how do you enjoy that? And, like, I can't put it into words. Like, it's just, like, a feeling. It's a vibe. It's, like, an aesthetic. It's everything. And, like, I think my problem with this movie is that the first 15 minutes are exactly my shit. And I'm like, oh, this is for me. And then it loses me. And I think it's not befuddlement that you like it. It's just sort of, like, loss over I didn't love. You know what I mean? It was so close for me, and then it just sort of took this slight turn. And I'm like, it's cool, but it's not what the 15 minutes are.
No, I agree with that.
The last thing I want to say was that the whole movie, I think, was inspired because Anna Lily Amirpour had this idea of a girl with one arm and one leg dragging herself through the desert on a skateboard, and was like, how do I make a movie out of that?
So that part of her on the skateboard reminded me of the beginning of There Will Be Blood, when Daniel Day-Lewis is crawling across the desert with a broken leg and, like, a pocket full of silver in it. So,
oh, yeah.
Pretty similar. That's what I got.
Well, thank you very much, Holly, for joining us. I wonder, I don't think you're on anymore. There's not too many more Keanu announced. We've got To the Bone next week, which is going to be on Netflix. By the time you hear this, it's already on Netflix. So watch that, I guess, if you want.
That was another surprise, surprise.
Yep. And then Holly will be back for our next actor. A couple of his... Oh, no, just one. Just one about halfway through. I'm not going to say... We still haven't announced who that is yet, but Holly will be back for a movie from 2004. So get ready for that, I guess.
I'm excited because I don't even remember what I signed up for. So.
Perfect. So for all things Keanu Club, including Holly's other episodes, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter. You can find everything at all those places. I keep trying to figure out new ways to sort of spread this out. So now stuff might be on YouTube. Who knows? Just search things and find things and listen to things and let us know. You can email, I don't know, just pick an email, joey@cageclub.me or zackattack@cageclub.me. We probably have other emails. I don't know what they are, but, you know, just send us emails. Tweet at us, Facebook us, whatever. Let us know you're listening is the point. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Holly Gore, and we'll see you next time on Keanu Club. Once you woke up late.